Welcome to the worst nightmare of all. Reality.
Explore the lesser-known stories of our unknown world. Join the pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
This week, we are joined by writer and former podcast host, Michaela Ford. Thank you for joining us, Michaela.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
So, like most interviews we do, just do sort of a bit of a background on yourself. But I know that you had, when you were 8 years old, you had what you call kind of a zombie experience when you were younger. So before we get into anything else, just want to tell us a little bit about that and that what and what you saw in that experience.
I will do. Now, I just have to put a caveat at the beginning. I called it a zombie when I was a kid, but I'm not claiming to have seen an actual zombie.
Yeah.
So when I went to school, it was in a very small village in West Yorkshire called Bradshaw. And like every school does, we had this sort of spooky story. We had the Bloody Mary one that everybody in the whole world seems to have, which I find incredible. But we had our own special one for Bradshaw, which was that there were quite a lot of old mill cottages that were derelict around the hillsides in Bradshaw. And we used to go and play in them and scare each other. And we sort of, I don't know where it came from, but there was this sort of legend of these figures that the children called zombies. And this was this was in the 70s. This is way before, as a kid, I would have had knowledge of anything to do with the zombies that you think of now. So I don't know where the name zombies came from. But this one particular day, we were all playing out in the playground and one kid shouted out, "Over there, look, there's the zombies. I can see the zombies." And so we all rushed over to the wall and looked over the fields. And so there's about 7 or 8 fields side by side going up this big hillside towards these derelict houses that we used to play in. And across from the playground, there was the sports field. Then beyond that, there was a field that was empty. And then beyond that, there was a field with cows in. But because it was going sloping up the hill, you could see quite well into each individual field. And there were a herd of cows. And behind the herd of cows, there were these 3 figures in black. And they looked like what you imagine the Grim Reaper to look like black monks with hoods right down to the floor. And they were carrying big staffs, which I presume were wooden. And they were walking really slowly. There were 3 of them, and they were very, very slowly herding the cows up the hill. And the cows weren't frightened. And I don't know if the cows could see them. I presume they must have been able to see them because they were moving as if they were being just herded off to be milked or something. And we were all shouting and screaming and pointing. And I remember we used to call them dinner ladies then, the ladies who work in schools at lunchtime. They're called midday meal supervisors now. And we said, Miss, can you see the zombies? It's the zombies. And she was really concerned because she couldn't see what we could see. We were all pointing and she couldn't see anything. She was going, "I can't see anything." And I got so overexcited. I said, "Miss, can I go into the sports field? Because I wanted to have a better look." I was really excited about seeing these things. And it was too far away that I wanted to see them better. And she said, "No." And then I think the head teacher got told, and it got so out of hand that the dinner bell was rung and everyone had to go back into their classrooms. And on the way back to my classroom, I could still see them across the field. And then when we got in the classroom, I couldn't see them anymore. And I was really sad about it because I just thought they were absolutely fascinating. So that's kind of the end of the story at that point. Now, nearly 20 years later, I was in the village with my friend, and she suggested that we go and see one of her friends whose dad owned, it was like a shop a bit like Iceland. It was a farm shop, but it was all frozen stuff. And it was quite famous in the village, and he was quite well to do and had a lot of money. So I was quite impressed that she knew the daughter of this man. And there was one time actually when he had a small zoo there, and apparently he had like lions and things. Wow. So he was a real entrepreneur, and what he'd done is for the daughter and the son, he'd built these kind of experimental apartments right at the edge of the field, so that when they got to like 18, they could live on the site, but have their own space, if you know what I mean, but be away from their parents. So I went in to see her, and we were looking through books, and we got talking about ghosts, because that's what I do, and I always have done. And I looked out of her kitchen window, which looked over onto the exact field that the school did, but further up the hill. And I said, oh, gosh, you'll never believe it, but when I was a kid, we saw what we called the zombies, these black figures in hoods walking up the field. And she just stopped and looked at me and said, oh, I see them all the time. And I just looked at her and went, what do you mean you see them all the time? She said, oh, well, I can see ghosts, and I see these figures all the time. And it really freaked me out, but it really cemented to me in my mind that I had actually seen these things, and it wasn't just something I'd made up as a kid, because somebody else corroborated it. And from then, I was literally just hooked. Everything I could read to do with the paranormal or horror stories, horror films, anything like that, I was just absolutely obsessed with.
So just sort of going back to the, when you first saw them when you were a kid, they said that the teacher said she couldn't see them. Do you think that she was just saying that to try and calm the kids down, or she actually couldn't see them?
No, I think she really couldn't see them, because she was really looking and going, where? And I was pointing and describing exactly, you know, you see where the last two cows are? Well, just behind there, there's three men with black things on and wooden sticks and things. And I think it really freaked her out because she couldn't see them. So I think only the children could see them.
So did you speak to any of the other children at the time about what they saw?
I did. We were all talking about it, but very quickly we were sort of made to be quiet, and it was, you know, we were just seeing things, and it was ridiculous. And you can imagine 1970s Northern school, there wasn't any time for all that sort of rubbish. But the interesting thing was that since, I have connected with two or three of my friends on social media, and two of them, when I said, do you remember that weird thing where we saw those figures that lunchtime, and they've gone, oh yeah, oh my goodness, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. I remember seeing those. And two of them do remember seeing them, which is really exciting, actually.
So do you have any idea what or who they were or what they were doing?
Well, since then, I have gone into it a bit and done some research. And actually, I was doing an interview with this writer called MJ Wayland a few weeks ago, and he's looked into these figures. And apparently, from what I can understand, the nearest thing to what I saw is something called the Genii Cucullati. I think I've said that right. And they are meant to be Celtic figures of worship that stood for fertility, children, and they were meant to be the guardians of the land. And apparently the ancient Britons worshipped these deities, and that's the nearest thing. Apparently in other parts of the north, there are quite a lot of carvings on churches of these three hooded figures, But the thing that MJ Wayland was really interested in was that he'd never heard of them being seen or recorded in West Yorkshire. So that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, that is a particularly strange one. What? So from then, you mentioned about ghosts and you got into ghosts a bit more after seeing those and reconnecting with people. What was your first sort of paranormal experience, if that wasn't it?
My very first paranormal experience, I'll tell you what it is, but I think with time you doubt yourself sometimes, because it actually, even when I say it back, it sounds quite far-fetched, but make of it what you will. This is what I remember, but I was only 3 or 4 years old. So that went, this was the very first thing that ever happened. I used to live with my nana and granddad when my mum got divorced from my natural father. And I lived there for quite a few years. And I used to wake up in the night quite a lot. So I remember this one particular day it must have been about 1974 or something. And it was a very exciting day in our house because we were having a new gas fire fitted. We had the old coal fire taken out and we had a new gas fire fitted. It was all very exciting. I don't know why I particularly remember it was that day, but it was. Probably because it ties in with the end of the story. Anyway, I came out of my bedroom. Later on, funnily enough, they got me a gate across my bedroom door after this experience. But I came out, I remember getting to the top of the stairs, and I remember this bit is woolly. I don't remember whether I saw something or spoke to something, but what I did was I jumped off the top of the stairs, and something carried me down the stairs. I floated down the stairs, and I landed at the bottom very lightly. And then I went to the living room door and I banged on the living room door and shouted, "Mommy, Mommy." And she flew to the door, opened it up and went, "What on earth are you doing out of bed?" And I said, "I just flew down the stairs." And she said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I just flew down the stairs." She said, "How did you get down the stairs? You know, you're not allowed to down the stairs by yourself." And I was absolutely adamant. I flew down the stairs. An angel brought me down the stairs, and that was it. And after that, I had lots and lots and lots of dreams about flying. And I know that that's quite common, I think, when children are younger. But I had this urge to fly. And in my dreams, I used to think that I could just run and jump and fly. So obviously, I'm not sure if I can trust my 3-year-old self. And I don't know really what happened, but it was such a vivid memory of the bit where I jumped off the stairs and flew down the stairs. So it could have been my imagination, I suppose, but it still had an effect on me.
So these experiences you've had when you were younger, did that sort of kick off your interest in the paranormal, or was it more when you were an adult?
I think it must have been the kind of the seeing those figures, because when I was a little bit older, I realized that I could read books about ghosts. I couldn't get enough of them. And I remember there was one in particular. I should have brought it upstairs to show you on the video, actually, but it's called True Ghosts. And it's a little book by Armada, I think it is. And I found it again recently. And it had about 10 stories in there about true ghosts. And I was literally obsessed with it. I just couldn't stop reading it. And then all the way through school, I was interested, but not actively. You know, secondary school, it was too exciting. So it really... came into It came to become more of an obsession when I got to college because the house that we stayed in was haunted. And I think that fired it all up again. Rather foolishly, we used to do a lot of Ouija boards. And I almost got one of my friends chucked out of school because of doing Ouija boards in the art room as well. because I was off ill one day and they decided to do it by themselves and they got caught and they got into a lot of trouble.
I can imagine.
So I'd say it began. I went to college in Hull and did a course called Exhibition and Museum Design. The only reason I went was because my friend was going and I managed to get on the course. And I basically just had 2 years of being ridiculously silly, going out, getting drunk, eating pizza, and doing the Ouija board and then inviting very strange things into our house, which then terrified us.
Oh, wow. So tell us a bit more about the experiences you had doing that then.
Okay, so... we lived in a house that was, it was a terraced house. Actually, it's quite funny because there's a very famous haunted house in Hull. I've completely forgotten the name of it now. I can't remember the name of the street.
It's not Grey Street or something.
Yes,
like that.
Yes. Funnily enough, it's less than half a mile from where my house was.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very similar sort of house, very tall, Victorian terrace. And the guy who rented it out was, I think an old lady had died in the house. He literally had put down some terrible cheap carpets and then got all the students in. And there were six of us staying in the house. And so I think it was me that started up this idea of doing the Ouija board. But we became quite obsessed with it. And we'd got to know some lads from Hull and they used to come round and we all used to have a night out and we'd go back after the student union and we'd get out this makeshift Ouija board and we made it out of a big kind of A1 piece of cardboard, white cardboard. We drew it out and we used a glass. And we'd do it several nights a week and we used to try and make it cheat proof. And what we would do was on the top of the bottom of the glass that was upside down, we would put washing up liquid on it so that no one could push it because it was too slippy. And the glass would go so fast on this piece of card. It was unbelievable. In fact, often it would just shoot off the card. And we had full-on conversations. Looking back, it's crazy now. It got such an obsession and it was so strong that we used to have a secretary. Each time, one of us would be the secretary and we'd write down what it said. I'd love to know where the heck those pieces of paper are, but I think they've been lost over time. I think my friend Emma took them home. But we got this one main spirit called Carla, and she was a mean woman. And she could say all sorts of things. And in the way of students, we got to doing some really silly things, like what colour knickers has Emma got on? And lo and behold, it would be right. It was really crazy, actually. And you know, can you touch our head? Can you pull our hair? Can you scratch one of us and all that sort of stuff that nowadays I wouldn't dream of doing, but you know, we were young, we might have been smoking something as well, as far as I remember. and we thought it was great. It was really exciting. But then it turned nasty. And, my friend Emma had a big crush on one of the other students called Ollie. And sometimes it would go into this kind of frenzy where the glass would go really fast and it was going, Emma loves Ollie, Emma loves Ollie, Emma loves Ollie really fast. And Emma then decided she didn't want to do it because she was really embarrassed. And we think we must have accidentally let out this Carla, because things started happening in the house. We all heard our names called quite a lot. So you'd be in the kitchen and someone would shout, Michaela. And then you go, what? And you'd walk into the hall and go, what? What? And everybody else would go, eh? Oops. What are you saying? So we're also there saying what? And nobody would have called. And this happened to all of us a lot of times. My bedroom seemed particularly active. And I used to have this, there was no heating in the house. So I had one of those plug-in electric heaters. And I had loads and loads of posters all over my walls. And what would happen is, if you had the heater on too long, the blue tack would go soft and the posters would slide off the wall and fall on the floor. And this used to happen quite a lot at night. Anyway, I remember this one particular night, I'd switched off the heater, I'd got into bed and I was asleep, but I was woken up by the sound of a heavy poster sliding off the wall and hitting the floor, and makes that kind of that wobbly kind of postery sound when it hit the floor. So I switched the light on and the posters were all there. The next thing that happened was that, and this is not all on the same night, this is on different nights, that I was asleep, and in my kind of student-y way, I decided I didn't like my bed. So I'd put it, we had this tiny box room. So I put the base in the box room and I slept on the mattress on the floor because it was really cool and hip to do that sort of thing. And one night when I was asleep, something banged the floor right next to my head as if somebody'd hit the floor with their hand outstretched really hard. And it just woke me up and there was, switch the light on, nothing there. And I could still kind of explain all this away to myself. But the one thing that really freaked me out was that one night my stereo was right next to my bed and it just came on full blast in the middle of the night. And absolutely, I shot out of bed. And I still thought to myself, well, maybe it was some sort of electrical thing. But when I look back now, I just think, you fool. You know, what were you doing messing around with things that you don't know about disrespectfully in that way?
Did your housemates like sort of believe that there was really stuff happening? Because obviously, with especially with the younger peer group, it'd be a bit of a joke, college people and stuff like this. Or were they really quite sort of thinking there's something happening?
My friends, the girls, there were four girls, and we thought there was something happening. The two boys were on a different course to us, and they were a bit older than us. They were PE students. And they thought it was a load of rubbish, but I don't know if they had experiences because we didn't really speak to them about it. They were both in the attic. They had two rooms in the attic. So I don't know if they had things that had happened or maybe they just didn't believe in it. So they explained it away.
So obviously there's quite a lot happening as you were growing up. So what made you sort of, because you got a podcast called Paranormal or What Podcast.
Yeah.
So what is it that inspired you to create that? Was it the history that you've got? Was your experiences and just wanting to talk to more people?
It was quite a lot of things, really. So I went through a little bit of the backstory. When I met my husband and lived in London back in around 2000, 2001, we were both acting together and we came back and lived in a flat together in London. And I remember at that time I discovered the TV programme Most Haunted, which I still love, despite all the things that people may say about it. I still love it. And I couldn't believe that there was a ghost hunting program on television. It almost felt like it had been made for me because I thought, I can't believe this is actually on. This is amazing. And there are people like me out there who want to find out all about this stuff. And I hadn't even considered that this could be a possibility that you could go out and hunt for ghosts. So it was a complete revelation to me. So I got really into it, but then not too long after that, we got married and had children. And I think something happens when you have babies that makes you really protective. And anything that was scary, I just blocked out. I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't want my children around the idea of paranormal or ghosts or anything. So I sort of turned my back on it for a good 8 years or so. And it was only then when my children started getting a bit older that I started going back to it, buying books, watching the programs on TV, which were there were much more of them by that time. Things like Ghost Adventures and all the American shows. And I really got into it. And then I thought, I wonder if I could do something like that. Not to be on TV or anything, but could I go out and hunt for ghosts? So I started looking for ghost hunting groups. And when we moved down to Chichester, I discovered there was a local ghost hunting group. So I joined them. And that was really interesting and fun. But then, of course, when COVID happened, that all stopped because we couldn't go out and be together and do our hunts. And I thought, what am I going to do? Because as much as I love teaching, it's something that I almost did. It was my plan B. So acting was always the thing I wanted to do. It's still the thing I want to do, and I'm going to go back. God damn it, one day when the children are grown up and I'm going to be Hyacinth Bouquet or whoever there is, I'm going to give it another go. I've done loads of Amdram over the years. Absolutely love it. Last year, no, the year before it was now, just before COVID, I played Lady Macbeth and stuff, and I just absolutely adore it. But I wanted something for me, and I thought, what can I do for me during lockdown? And I'm sure that loads of people had this sort of feeling. What can I do to stop myself going mad? That's to do with something that I'm really interested in. And that's where the idea came to do the podcast. And I thought it was literally the reason I did the podcast was literally to get to know people who were interested in the same thing as me. That's the only reason I did it. Plus, I can talk quite a lot, as I'm sure that you're realizing now. So I thought, why not put my skills of talking and my interest in ghosts together, and try and get to know some people? Because I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. My husband's not interested whatsoever, doesn't believe in it. He's a lot less rude about it now that I've got a podcast and I'm actually doing something proper. But I just didn't have people to chat to who didn't think that I was absolutely bonkers. So it's been wonderful because I've been able to talk to people like you and all the other people I've interviewed and got to know over the past year. It's been incredible. So that's why I did it, really. That I'm sorry that was the long answer.
No,
That's
no.
all good.
It's amazing because over the past year, like when we do research for episodes and topics, I didn't realize at the time until after we were guests on your podcast that I'd actually listened to a few of your episodes in doing research for our own
Oh, really?
podcast. So it's only when I looked through, it's like, oh, played. This episode's been played already. Oh, I remember this. I remember this. Using some of part of my research, listening to some of your episodes. It's like, oh wow, that's we awesome. Now I listen to every one of them now, which is
Oh, that's so
yeah.
cool. I feel really privileged because actually you've done a lot better than me. I'm like, how did Ash and Greg do this so well and so quickly? Because I'm just bumbling along with a few listeners going, I've no idea. I think it's because you're so good at the tech between you, and I'm not very good at the tech.
I
So
think the fact that we have discussed this as well. I think because there's two of us as well, we've got somebody we have to deliver to, if that makes sense. So we can't we have spoken about it. It is tough. It is tough going to try and do it, as you'll know. It is a challenge.
And I think especially when it's beyond your usual skill set as well, because, you know, I can do the presenting side and the research side and things, but the tech side I find a bit of a challenge actually sometimes. But you know, you learn. I've been using Audacity all by myself. I'm so pleased. My 13-year-old's been helping me.
That's all good. Yeah, it's quite a steep learning curve at the start.
It really
is.
As we found.
So now we're a bit further down the line. We kind of sort of understand it a bit more. So
I still can't use Audacity.
I can't either. I look at it and I was like, I don't know what that even means. I've tried GarageBand, which is another one.
That's a good one, yeah.
I look at it and I just give up. I don't know how to do it. So
my problem is because my memory's so bad, I use Audacity and every time I use it, I kind of press things until I finally get to where I want to be. And the next time I go, I have to start all over again because I can't remember what I did.
So, I mean, like us, you cover quite a wide range of different paranormal subjects. You got Bigfoot episodes, ghost episodes. Do you think that there's a link between all these different aspects of the paranormal?
I think there is. It's really difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, to a large extent, we are kind of feeling around in the dark, literally, because we all have theories about what things are. And it's getting the proof is the really, really, really challenging bit. So sometimes I'll think, yes, I definitely think that Bigfoot has a paranormal aspect. And I think maybe Bigfoot can go into another dimension, and that's also where spirits and ghosts are. And then at other times I'll say to myself, oh, don't be ridiculous. If Bigfoot's real, then it's just a creature like any creature. And I think that ghosts are spirits of the dead and there isn't another dimension. And what I find is, I think they are all connected basically, but my theories on what they are constantly changing, constantly evolving. I feel like I'm a bit wishy-washy in that way because I don't have a definite, you know, idea and that I can argue with someone like a lot of people have. But I don't know whether that makes me more flexible or more open, or if it just makes me completely wishy-washy and constantly changing my mind. But I think they are connected.
I think it is good to constantly change your mind because you're obviously thinking about it and not just getting blinkered and going down one sort of like avenue.
So yeah.
Before we'd done the podcast, I would think that ghosts were maybe the spirits of dead people. But then as we've been speaking to a whole load of people, the different dimensions, all that kind of stuff starts to play more of a part in my thoughts as well. And then like with Ash asking the question about Bigfoot and the paranormal, that slides in there as well, and UFOs coming alongside it. So it's very murky, I think. So to you say wishy-washy, I don't think it's wishy-washy. I think it's good that you do. Then you're not blinking, you are open. So
yeah, I do try to question myself a lot, and I do try to read a lot as well, and so my opinions are constantly changing, because if I'm reading a book by a certain person, throughout that book I'll probably go, right, oh yes, I definitely agree with what they say, and then I'll say on UFOs, and then I might read another book on UFOs where somebody has a completely different take on it, and then I end up agreeing with them. So I'd be quite happy to say what I think about individual things such as UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts and things like that, but I can't promise I won't change my mind in the future.
But it's good that you're on a journey, sort of almost unknowingly you're on a journey. You're just finding stuff out and going, oh, actually, yeah, well, yeah. So is there one particular piece of evidence or one particular case across, say, Bigfoot or the paranormal or UFOs that you've gone, actually, that is the most compelling sort of argument for A, B, or
For
C?
that,
Yeah.
I think the one thing that sticks out to me at the moment is the case of the UFOs in Todmorden and the potential abduction of Tony Dodd, which, funnily enough, it just came back to the front of my mind recently because Danny Robbins has got a podcast on the BBC, and he was looking into that. And I've read the book by Tony Dodd about his experiences with what he believes being abducted, and I find it compelling because he was such a down-to-earth person, and coming from somewhere like, I hate to put you, I've got to be careful here because I'm a Yorkshire person, but I'm talking about Yorkshire people, and I don't want to offend any Yorkshire people. But Yorkshire people can be quite set in their ways, and from my own experience of some of the people I know, I'm not casting aspersions on all Yorkshire people here. Some of the people I know are quite blinkered in their outlook, and once they have an idea about something, then that's their idea, no matter what. And for somebody to go so far out of their comfort zone publicly, and say, this happened to me, and I'm not ashamed of it, and this is what I believe, then I think that has to be taken seriously.
Especially he was a police officer as well, wasn't he? So it's quite a big thing to come out back then as well to say that.
And so that really, I'd never had an interest in UFOs or anything like that, until I read that book. And I was just blown away because I hadn't even considered the possibility that anything like that could be real. And it really did sort of change my mind, I have to say. I'm still annoyingly on the fence because one day I think that they are real, and then the next day I go, oh, don't be ridiculous. How can that be real? So I do kind of to and fro quite a lot with the whole UFO and abduction thing. But I think his story was really compelling, and it really gave me a lot of food for thought, actually.
So, do you think that since doing the podcast, just to go back to that slightly, do you think you've become more open to different sort of explanations of what might be happening?
Oh yes, definitely. And also my knowledge of different things has grown massively. I mean, a similar thing happened with the whole Bigfoot idea. As far as I knew, Bigfoot was just a story, literally a story. And until I think I first started watching programs about it. Not the Expedition Bigfoot that came later. What's the other one called? Finding Bigfoot, is it? With Bobo Fay. I watched one of those and I literally was hooked, and I watched every single episode. I couldn't get enough of it. My mind was absolutely blown at the thought that this could possibly be a real thing. And the more I researched into it, the more convinced I became that this could possibly be a real thing. In terms of the real creature, I am I'm still unsure about the paranormal aspect of it, but I do believe that there are these creatures, whatever they are, in vast places like, like the USA and Canada and massive countries. I'm less sure about the UK, but I think that that's just because I have no frame of reference. Some people, some very nice people that I've spoken to believe that they've seen them, and I believe that they believe that they've seen them. But obviously, I think there's one thing that you have to come back to the whole time with the whole paranormal thing, is that you can listen to somebody else's experience, and it's up to you whether you think that that experience is what they think it is, but you can never know because it's not your experience. And I think you just have to be respectful of the experience that they've had. And sorry, I've completely talked away there and forgotten what the original question was.
It was just about being more open-minded since you started doing the podcast.
Yeah, I am definitely massively more so, because I started doing the podcast just having a belief in ghosts, and the people that I've spoken to have really opened my mind about lots and lots and lots of things, and I'm really grateful for that, because I can quite safely read about all these creatures from now until doomsday and never run out of material to talk about with people, which is fabulous.
Do you have a dream guest that you'd like to have on to talk to?
Apart from us.
Apart from
yes.
Us.
Well, of course. No, I've achieved my dream. I had one of my dream guests on, which was Darren Marlar from Weird Darkness podcast. And he was the first person who I ever listened to on podcasts. I'd love to speak to Derek Hayes from Monsters Among Us one day. And I'd really love to interview. I'd love to interview. Oh, gosh, you got me in a roll now. I'd love to interview Cliff Barrackman from Finding Bigfoot. Although I'm actually quite terrified of the idea of interviewing him, because he's so clever. I think he'd probably just tie me up in knots. So I'd love to do that, but I'd be a bit nervous. I'd really love to speak to a couple of really famous people who believe in the paranormal. Robbie Williams really is interested in UFOs. And also, and of course, his name's just flown straight out of my head, the guy from Ghostbusters.
That ain't good.
Yes, I'd love to speak to him as well. Although it might be quite challenging keeping him tamed for the podcast interview. So, yeah, lots of people, really. Oh, and of course, the godmother of the paranormal, Yvette Fielding. I've been pestering her for so long. She must be fed up with me by now. Hi, Yvette. I went on a Most Haunted experience just before Christmas at the Portsmouth Tunnels, and it was really, really good fun. But she wasn't there. But I've been, every time I do an Instagram post or a Twitter post, I put at Yvette Fielding. And sometimes she likes my posts, which is, I think I'm a bit awestruck because she was the first person that I ever encountered, in the media who was interested in this thing. So I would love to interview her. Yvette, call me.
I doubt she's listening to this podcast.
She will.
So going back here to your experiences, I've heard you talk before about vanishing objects. So yes. I was wanting you could just sort of tell us a bit of them experiences that you had about objects vanishing.
Well, so this is in the house that I live in now, which rather conversely, I don't believe is haunted at all. But there have been some very, very strange things happening. Not so much recently, actually. more 2 or 3 years ago. And there, it's always, I don't know, I'm sure, I think most people have had these experiences where they put something down and they're sure it's there, and then they turn around and it's not there. And they always go, oh, I must have moved it, or forgotten where I put it, or and then it seems to, then when you look for it a bit longer, it's in the place where you looked in the first place, and you think, well, how did I not see it? And there is this theory that it's it goes to another dimension. And I'll tell you something to do with this afterwards, which is really quite far out. But so what happened was, I've got two main ones. So this happened to me and still happens to me all the time. And quite amusingly, happens to my husband, who doesn't believe in all of this. And it does make me chuckle. And I always go, see, told you, told you. So I've got two, which I've rather stupidly given names to. One is Slippergate. And one is face cloth gate. And it, just because it was a mystery that I couldn't solve. So Slippergate. I was at home one day. This was, I gave up teaching for about a year and a half. I had quite a hard time. And this particular school I was at, so I packed it all in, didn't want to be a teacher anymore. So I had quite a lot of time on my hands while I was trying to figure out what other job I could do and things. So one day I was at home by myself, kids were at school, husband at work. I went for a shower, and as far as I knew, I left my slippers by my bed, went off, had a shower, came back into the bedroom, slippers weren't there. So of course I went, oh, where have I put my slippers? So sort of trudged around upstairs between the bedroom and the bathroom several times, looked under the bed, looked behind the door in the bathroom, everywhere, can't find these slippers. I'm sure I had them on when I was upstairs. So then I went downstairs, looked throughout the whole house, muttering to myself. This is one thing that's quite important in this, is that I talk to myself a lot. So if I'm in the, I think it comes from being an only child, because I was quite lonely when I was a child. And so I used to talk to my toys and all that sort of thing. And I've kind of, I mutter to myself the whole time, and I'm sure a lot of people do. So I'm saying all these things out loud. I wonder where my slippers are. Right, I think I'll go and have a look downstairs, blah, 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 blah. Well, where can they be? I thought, I'm going to have another look in the bathroom. Went into the bathroom, went back into the bedroom. I don't know where they are. I think I'm going mad. Went back into the bathroom. Went back into the bedroom. My slippers were in the doorway of the bedroom, next to each other, as if somebody had just placed them in the doorway of the bedroom. And I just went, thank you, to the ether. I went, I can't be going that mad. I've been backwards and forwards about 10 times. I would have tripped over them. What? How can they have just got back there? So that was that time. And then face cloth gate. I felt like I'd actually caught whatever it was out this time. So I went into the bathroom. I had put out a clean face cloth on the side of the sink. Next to the sink in the bathroom is our washing basket. Came back into the bathroom. I can't remember why I was looking for the face cloth. I'm just going to use the face cloth. Oh, the face cloth's not there. Oh, that's weird. I've only just put it out. Where is it? Maybe it's fallen on the floor. No, it's not on the floor. Oh, well, maybe somehow it got into the washing basket. Takes the lid off the washing basket, pulls out the whole washing basket. No face cloth. Pulls out everything, looking around. Nothing there. Puts everything back in. Oh my goodness, I am really losing the plot now. Turns around to the other side of the bathroom, goes in the laundry cupboard, get out a new face cloth, turn around to the sink, the face cloth's back on the sink. Literally, in those seconds, what, 3 seconds it took me to go in the cupboard, grab a face cloth, turn around, it was back. And I literally went, I caught you! I caught you doing that. Well, I didn't actually see it happen, but I near as damn it caught it happening. So I don't know what it is, but I'm going to tell you another story now. And it was something that I really freaked myself out about. I did an interview with an author called Craig Bryant, and a lovely man. And I was telling him all about these experiences and things. And I had read quite a lot of the stuff that he'd written. And I told him this story that my friend had told me, and I'll tell you it in a second. And he said, that's weird, because my friend told me almost exactly the same story as that, word for word. And I had a massive panic attack, because I thought what I'd done was somehow mistakenly told him back his story. Do you know what I mean? Because I'd read his book. And I thought it must have been in the book, and somehow my mind had turned it into my experience and I'd told it back to him. So I can remember I went all hot and red, and I was thinking, oh my God. I literally just quoted his own story back to him. Anyway, so afterwards I went back to my friend that I thought had told me it and said, Jean, did you tell me a story about blah, blah, blah? She went, yeah. I was like, oh my God. Thank you. Thank God for that. Thank God. So now I'm going to tell you the story. So this is my teaching assistant at school, who's fabulous and also believes in this sort of stuff, but doesn't actively pursue it. So she's from Dublin, and she was told this experience by her auntie. So it's what, a story twice removed. She was told it by the auntie, and then she told it to me. So her auntie had been having a lot of incidents of missing objects. Apparently it's called JOT. I've got a book about it. I can't remember who the author was now, but if you just typed it into the internet, it comes up. There's a whole book about missing objects, and this author, she calls it JOT, J-O-T-T. And just one of those things it's called. And so this elderly auntie in Dublin had all these things going missing. She walked into her bedroom one day during the day, and there was this creature in her bedroom, and it looked like, it was about 2 feet tall, and she said it looked like a very thin sort of gnome type elf thing, but it was all brown, like wrinkled wood, like dark wrinkled wood, she said. And just as she walked into the bedroom, she saw this small spindly dark brown elfin type creature jump, like step back into a tear in reality. If you imagined being able to cut a hole and pull it open like they do in the films, it reminds me of His Dark Materials. She said it stepped back and closed it behind it. And this is just a lady, an elderly Irish lady who had no need to make up a story like this. But Craig Bryant said that the person that he interviewed in Britain said that they saw almost exactly the same thing. Now, doesn't that boggle your mind? If that was real, oh my goodness, that could be an explanation for the missing things. I'm not saying I believe that, but it's food for thought.
Strange, because we spoke to somebody recently and he talked about a gnome in his kitchen.
Really?
And at that point, I was thinking, okay, that's one of the more
unusual stories.
Unusual stories that we've heard over the year, for definite. For you to say there's two people that have said it differently or separately.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is. It's worth researching, I think, if nothing else.
Could be the inspiration for the borrowers. Yeah, because they're little people, aren't they, that take your items and they go missing. Yeah. Just really what you're describing there is little people-like creatures that are taking
that stuff. Are borrowing things and then putting them back.
Yeah. Could be. There's lots of UFO and stuff in modern culture that could be. Borrowers could be based on something.
They could. I have tried, when I've lost something, I have tried asking out loud for it. Sometimes I've found it and sometimes I haven't. So, because my theory was, well, if something's messing with me, then maybe it could also help me. So, you know, when things are going missing, I thought it's always worth a try. Can you please tell me where my blah, blah, blah is, please? Help me find it.
So do you get a sense of what this thing doing it might be? Do you get any kind uneasy feeling or normal feeling or no feeling?
No feeling whatsoever. The only other very strange thing that happened in this house was a really very quick one-off, very, very bizarre event. This was about 2 years ago, again in my bedroom. And I was just, I don't know, putting away some clean washing or something. And suddenly there was this really loud static noise in my ears. And a woman's voice went, "Hello?" And then it went. And it was, I can't describe, it was in my head. I wasn't hearing it with my ears. It wasn't outside or around me. It was in my head. It was like my head had become a radio antenna for a few seconds. So I don't know what that was. I know some people believe that that they can communicate with beings in UFOs and that they communicate telepathically, almost like a radio signal. I'm not saying it was that, but that's the only thing that I could equate it to that I've heard people talk about. I have absolutely no explanation for what happened. But other than that, I'm completely lying. Of course I am. I never get a bad feeling. I see things out of the corner of my eye all the time, but that's not specific to this house. I see black things out of the corner of my eye all the time, but I don't get a bad feeling about this house. I don't feel like it's haunted. I did once act upon, and this was only a few months ago, I was coming out of the bathroom and I saw a black creature out of my peripheral vision on my left-hand side, and I saw it going into my eldest son's bedroom, and it was literally less than a second, but it disturbed me enough that I went in his bedroom while he was asleep and searched around to see if I could find anything. But I've always seen things out of my peripheral vision. I was told once many, many, many years ago that when I'm much older than I am now, she said that I would have some sort of ability. So I don't know if that's a latent ability that I may have later in life. I've no idea. But I do see things.
Interesting.
It's funny, the more you talk about things, the more you forget, the more you remember the things that you'd forgotten about yourself.
Yeah. I suppose there's that much going in all the time. It's quite hard to remember everything all the time. So you also write for the Paranormality magazine.
Yes.
How'd that come about? And give us a bit more details about the magazine itself as well.
Okay, so that came about because I think it was on social media, and I'd seen a little advert that somebody had put up on social media on one of the many groups that I'm part of. And they said that they were looking for writers on paranormal material, and that you didn't need to have experience, and it didn't matter what it was about. They were looking to start up this digital magazine and they just wanted writers. So I emailed the guy, Jack Kirby, and he sent me an email back very nicely and said, oh, why don't we have a meeting? So we had a Zoom meeting because he's in America. And we got on well and he said, yeah, why, you know, write something and send it to me and then we'll see if we can put it in the magazine. And it just all snowballed from there, really. I believe that all the other writers are in America, which makes it a little bit difficult. We're having a group meeting tomorrow, actually, and it has to be very carefully organised because of the time difference. But there are a great bunch of people. I've mainly only met them via messaging. I've met Jack on Zoom. And so he's trying to put together a really, really good digital paranormal magazine, basically. And it's already growing. I believe that sometime in the very near future, it's going to be a paid for magazine. It's currently been, up until now, it's been a free magazine. And we've all volunteered our time to write the articles, but hopefully if it continues to grow as fast as it is, we might end up with it being a really sort of a big thing, which is what I'm hoping, where it's a way to get to know people at the other side of the world as well, which is my main objective, as I said, is to just get to know as many people in this world as possible. I'd love it at some point if I could go over to the US and go to some of these conferences and meet people and interview people. So yeah, so check it out, everybody. Paranormality Magazine. And your good selves have been in there. You've appeared in there, haven't you?
We have, yeah. We've got the link on our link tree. It takes straight to the magazine as well. So
we were on the front cover as well.
We were.
It's very exciting, isn't it? Because yeah. When my husband had COVID over Christmas, I emailed Jack and said, Jack, I'm really sorry. I don't think I'm going to be able to do this, write up this article I was going to write because it's just pandemonium in my house at the moment. I'm feeding my husband by taking him meals with rubber gloves on. And it's just, and he said, oh, don't worry. And I said, I do have this story about my my experience with the zombies in the playground. Would you be interested in that at all? And he went, yeah, sure. It's your origin story. Come on. And I was like, oh, I hadn't really looked at it like that. So he very kindly put it in. And then my name was on the front cover. It's a very strange experience, isn't it, being on the front cover of a global magazine. Very exciting.
Very much so. So what is the future of the Paranormal or What podcast for 2022 for you?
My aim is to broadcast episodes more regularly. Obviously, I don't want to harp on about being a teacher, but I am harping on about being a teacher. It takes up a lot of my time being a teacher and a mum. And a wife and all those sorts of things, and I'm trying to squeeze things in at the moment. I'm doing a bi-weekly podcast. I'd love to get to the point where I can do it every week. I'd also really like to put it out there on Patreon, although I am aware that I would need to create a lot more content to be able to do that. In an ideal world, I would like to eventually have the podcast and any other paranormal work that I could get. I would like to gradually get that to take over and reduce my way out of teaching and just be working on the podcast and any other, I don't know, presenting, radio, acting. Anything like that I actually feel really, really passionate about. I love teaching. I've given it 17 years and now I'd like to gradually do something for me. So I'd love to be able to do more of the podcast and have it go somewhere. That would be my ideal thing. So, and I also need lots and lots of really interesting people to interview. So anybody who's got a story or had an experience, please do get in touch with me.
And how can they do that?
Well, they can email me at paranormalorwhatpodcast@outlook.com, or they can come to our Facebook page, Paranormal or What Podcast Facebook page. They can also go to the Anchor podcast page and search up Paranormal or What Podcast, and there is a way to contact me on there, and also to make voice recordings on their phone of any stories that they have. They can upload it directly to the website.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you, Michaela. Awesome chatting to you again. Thanks for coming on and sharing your history with us.
Pursuit of the Paranormal with Ash and Greg.